This is part two of the success call with Curtis Johnson. If they take that next step and they want to get the value of their home in today's market, what do they do at that point? They've already entered some of their information, right? They've already entered their address. At that point, is that where you're requesting their name and phone number?
No, we've already requested that right before for them to be able to get access to the information. They get some very, very, very preliminary information. Then, you know, hey, if you want this whole report, fill your information out. And then it says we'll follow up and get you that information. So, you know, we get their information. We contact them. Does a great job getting really, really high percentage of phone numbers and emails and so forth like that. And that's really how we're able to do that.
Ah, so just like the buyer's side, what you're doing to capture the information is you're giving them a taste of the pretzel.
Yep.
And when they come in, they're able to see some of the data about the sales in their neighborhood, but you've teased them with that. If they want more detail, at that point, they're going to have to register. They're going to have the forced registration where they have to give you all the information.
Yep.
And that is before they actually see the list of all the buyers in their area?
Yep. Uh-huh. Yes, it is.
And that just helps them go one step further.
Yeah, and there's some people that will opt out and say, oh, I don't want to do that or whatever, and that's fine. What I've found in this business is you really have to focus on the people that want to do business with you as opposed to the people that don't. If you're trying to sell everything to everybody, you're going to go broke. So what you're trying to do is you're trying to narrow down, and I just try and explain to people, it's like, we're gold miners. You don't just go to a gold mine that has gold all over the walls, right? That you're sorting the gold from the gold. That just doesn't happen, right? You're trying to find the gold in the dirt. So you're just trying to scrub through it as fast as you can. You're trying to be to the right place. And what marketing does is marketing essentially brings you to the gold mine, right? You still have some dirt. You still got to go through it. But almost everybody else that doesn't market or that doesn't cast a wide enough shadow, they're just randomly digging through dirt, just in any dirt field, hoping that that's a gold mine. And it's discouraging. It's frustrating. It's hard to, you know, if you don't have some successes, if you don't find some gold, it's pretty discouraging. So there's never a perfect system, but these are ways to be able to get you in touch with buyers and sellers and get you to be in front of people.
You mentioned you're also using Craigslist. What are you doing with Craigslist?
We did very, very well with it for probably the last 3 years or so, putting houses up there, putting our listings, getting agreements with other agents to be able to put their listings up there and vice versa, and driving people back to the same strategy. And, you know, it was great because, you had some virtual assistants or people in your office be able to post and be able to do that and drive them back. But so many people have gone there that I don't think it's necessarily a great place. The buyer traffic has dropped dramatically there because there's just so much stuff on there. We still get a lot of leads and stuff, but not nearly what we did years ago. But we do have some different strategies. If we just did the same things we always did, we wouldn't be getting the same results. But you've got to drive them back to better squeeze pages. And then we probably get as much results as anything at the bottom of our houses that we put there. We put links back to find the value of your home right now. So we're actually picking up seller leads from it. People that are looking for houses, but 35-40% of all buyers have a home to sell. And that's really what we focused on for years, is that the majority of our sellers would come from our buyers.
So the Craigslist is free. It just takes a lot of your time to continuously post. The pay-per-click is going to cost something. You said you try to get people to stay on your page longer and try to create a lot of relevance, all in the effort of getting your pay-per-click down.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea what your range of cost is on pay-per-click or an average pay-per-click when you're working on either the buyer or the seller side?
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what they are. I mean, as far as what the cost per lead is or the cost per clicks.
Let's talk about both. That sounds great. Yeah, what's the cost per click and then the cost per lead, say, on the buyer side?
Well, our market here in Arizona, we've got more, just came out in Bloomberg just recently, we've got more licensed real estate agents here than any other state, any other metro place per capita. So a lot of them come in, jump, throw money into the internet and so forth like that. So it's pretty competitive compared to other markets. I handle PPC for probably about 50 other clients across the country and so forth like that. So ours is one of the highest, probably the third highest I know of that I handle. And it's just, you know, cost per click is pretty deceiving because, you know, there's a lot of, we do a lot of long tail keywords that we can get relatively cheaply, but the conversions just aren't as good. So on the buyer side, I, you know, used to buy leads from different companies. They were, the most of the leads were somewhere in the $20 to $40, $50 range on, for buyers. In most cases, I can get it down to $7 to, in some markets, $11, $12 or so on the buyer side over time. On the seller side, with these strategies, we're actually able to get it quite a bit cheaper. So I would say $10 or cheaper on the seller side for per lead, which is fantastic.
The cost per click, you're not as concerned about. You're focusing your efforts on how can I get that cost per lead down?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely focus. I mean, obviously, cost per click, a lot of people, you know, can kind of get freaked out about. If you're paying $3.50, $4, and someone clicks on it and clicks right back, I mean, there goes your lunch, right? But always just, you know, really focused on the cost per lead, and it's over, you know, a longer period of time. So, yeah, that's the bigger issue to me. And over time, it gets better and better. So that's the good thing. Is the longer you do it, you start working with the campaigns, you start figuring out what works and what doesn't in each individual market, and getting rid of the bad stuff. So your costs progressively, like on my seller stuff. I mean, I've got it from seller stuff. I started out with about $25 a lead initially, and now it's down to $4.55 a lead. You know, which is pretty much unheard of.
And that's because you're constantly testing, experimenting, tweaking, seeing what's working and what's not working. You mentioned you had those 25 to 125 different variations on an ad. You're constantly trying to make that a little better, yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously, I'm probably a little bit too, I love to test. I love, you know, multivariance and checking different things. And it doesn't have to be that complex, but you do have to get in the game. You've got to either have somebody do it or you've got to get really good at it. Because that's the future. If I was the best agent in the world and you were the worst, but you were a much better marketer than I was, you'd be in business and I'd be out of business. And it's not that that's great in real estate, because you wish there was more really, really good people that cared about them. But it's just from a marketing perspective, for whatever reason in real estate school, they tend to try and get you to believe that if you're just a good person or you mean well and you give good service that you're going to survive in this business. But, you know, 85% of the people are just going to blow out because they just are poor at marketing. And if you don't have anybody in front of you, this business can get really, really difficult. But if you've got people in front of you, it's so much fun.
Let's do this. Let's switch gears a little bit. Let's talk about radio ads. What are you doing with radio?
I've been working with a guy, Matt Wagner, for Radio and Television Experts, and he's a great guy. Been working with him for probably, I'm going to say maybe 6 years or so, 6 or 7 years, and he does a lot of the media buys, and we work together. We've got endorsements with Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, John Tesh, some other different people, and adding more all the time, and it just gives you that credibility. They're building their brand all the time, every day on the radio and TV, and they build a following. And when they say, hey, use Curtis to sell my house, that's who I would use. It comes with that endorsement. Those are just some of the best leads. It's pretty expensive, especially in our market. It's pretty expensive, but they're some of the best ROI. But most people get freaked out, you know, over the costs and different things like that. And you've got to have the message correct and the schedule, the right part of the day part and stuff like that. But once you get that dialed in, some of the best high-end listings and high-end buyers out there are going to respond to radio just from the demographics of it.
Sounds like you're generating a lot of seller leads off of the radio.
Yeah, you're probably going to have 80-20 sellers versus buyers off the radio. Most radio ads are not going to pull buyers because they're mostly going to go to the internet, but sellers, you know, sellers are going to come off the radio.
How many radio stations are you advertising at this point?
Right now, we've narrowed it down to just one or two. Right now, we'll probably be expanding. We found radio talk works better than most everything else, and there's a couple big ones here in our area, but we're pretty comfortable with that right now. We might move into some sports talk radio, but so far, we haven't jumped on that yet.
Mainly, you've been doing these endorsed ads. They've all been written up by Matt Wagner and his group. Do you speak during the ad?
I've done both. You know, I've done some interactive spots, but they typically don't do as good as just the endorser, which I'm comfortable with. I'm happier that way, actually.
How about just some big picture metrics? How much are you spending on it, and how much is it bringing in?
I've done anywhere between $5,000 and $30,000 in a month. I've made money with all of it. So most of it is more dependent on the group of people you've got on your team, their ability to be able to convert it, and the need for new clients and so forth like that. Typically, we'll get about a 3-to-1 return ROI on the radio stuff. One of the unsung things, I guess, about radio, though, is it makes everything else better. So even if someone finds you on the internet or they just meet, it gives you incredible credibility, whether you're recruiting agents to your team, whether you're whatever it is, it makes all of your other marketing better. So even if the tracking directly back to radio becomes a little bit problematic, or you're like, oh, well, that's a good return, but maybe I'll get a better return here, it makes everything else better and it increases your ROI on everything else you're doing.
You're also generating a lot of business from past clients and sphere of influence. Let's talk a little bit about that. Can you tell us how big is your database of past clients and sphere of influence?
Well, I'd say probably of all the things I do well, that's not one of them. no, I just can't. So I'm, you know, I do pretty poor at a lot of different things, and keeping up with past clients, you know, we've got coming up on about 3,000 past clients, and we do a very poor job. You know, I'm kind of in it for the hunt. I'm always after the next deal, and I know I've gone through all the numbers. I get it. All the, you know, there's more deals in your past database and stuff like that. It's just something I just haven't done very well at. We do really, really good at generating referrals and stuff like that during the transaction as it's going on in escrow, and we do a fantastic job with that. But past clients, we do a pretty poor job with. So I guess that's for this next year to kind of pick it up and do a better job with that.
Tell us about your team.
I've had a team for probably about the 12 of the 14 years or so I've been in business. Still have the same buyer agent I had back then. He went off and came back, and I just moved him into working as a recruiter because, like I said, one of the things I'm really passionate about is lead generation and some of the benefits that come with that. And so we've had one of the challenges I've had over the years is I haven't really wanted to grow. I've been pretty comfortable with the size of our team, and sometimes I've wanted to grow, but then I kind of mostly my worst enemy with that and get frustrated with it. And every person you hire is kind of they come with their own issues and things like that. But I'm able to generate so many more leads that I really want people that want to work them. And so we really said, hey, let's go. Let's build this and let's grow and bring on some more people. So that's really what we're doing. That's what we've started to grow over the last few months. We've gone from about 10, 12 buyer agents. We've just really brought on a bunch more that are getting up and going, and we're up to about 25 or so. And I think by the end of the year, I bet within the next 6 months, we'll get to probably 50. And so I'm looking for, obviously, corresponding results over the next 12 to 18 months with that as well as they kind of get up and growing. I've got several admins, some virtual assistants, and I handle most of the lead generation and marketing, and that's kind of how we have it set up.
If I were to look at the big picture of your team, you have an administrative staff with some virtual assistants. Your buyer agents, really, it sounds to me like you're having them do both buy and sell side. In fact, do you even call them buyer agents? What's the label that you use for those folks?
I'd say about half of them, it's mostly skills-based. So if they've got good enough skills and they sign off and they do presentation, if I would sign with them, then I'll let them do listings. But everyone starts out as a buyer agent, and about half of them can do both buyers and sellers. And if they are a buyer agent, then they can, if they convert a lead into a listing, you know, they can either just work with someone else or turn it over to them, have somebody else work it or anything else like that. So about half of them just work with buyers and half can do both. And I've gone back and forth between having strictly buyer agents and strictly listing agents. And, you know, and I understand the complexities on both and the benefits, and there's definitely some benefits by doing that. But one of the things I found was you find what you look for. And sometimes buyer agents would just never even ask, hey, you know, do you have a home to sell or anything else like that? So I found that one of the trade-offs is by letting some buyer agents work listings as well, they'll be looking for them. And so we don't leave as many listings that just go unasked for or anything else like that.
How are you compensating these agents? Are you paying a salary? Are you paying a commission split?
Yeah, it's a commission split. You know, I've looked at the salary, and I've got some good friends that are doing that, and that might be something we try a few of those in the future. But right now, everybody's just on a commission split.
How have you structured that?
Commission split? Some of it depends on their production. If they're doing less than 12 a year, 12 to 24, 24 or above, and then also we give them a little bit of a bump up, about 10% if they bring in the lead themselves as opposed to just a company generated. So we try and give them incentives. We want people that want to sell a lot of houses. We want people that can turn leads into more leads and that aren't just dependent on the team. We want them to be able to do that, but we want them to also try to look to work their sphere as well.
So what's the commission split if someone's selling less than 12 homes a year?
You know, there's some complexities in that because we've got some different fees. We've got our transaction compliance if, you know, we're closing it out and some different stuff. But for the most part, we're pretty competitive. Our splits are going to be from 45% net out to the agent to as much as maybe 60. If they're a really, really high producer and they bring in the deal and so forth like that, it can go as high as maybe like 65% net at the end of the day.
Do they receive the same commission split if they're working the seller side or the buyer side, or is there a different split if they're working, say, the seller side?
No, it's not quite as good. No, that, you know, we obviously have more costs on the seller side, and so no, it's not the same. It's still pretty competitive, but not quite the same, just a little bit below that.
Would you mind sharing it with us what that range is on the sell side? If the buyer side is around 45%, what's a seller side?
I guess it's more difficult because it's not just strictly across the board. There's other variables as far as what other types of things they did with it, how much of the transaction they handled, and so forth. But it's probably, most people are going to be probably in the 35 to 50%, which on listings is really, really good. Could be a little bit more than that in some situations if they're selling an awful lot of houses. But we definitely pay too much on the listing side compared to if you were going to model it out. But at the same point, I'm pretty comfortable with that. I'm pretty comfortable. We're still making money with that.
Yeah, I just want to give people perspective. If they're going to bring in a listing partner or a seller side agent, that they're probably not going to want to pay as high as a buyer agent because, as you mentioned, there's more cost involved, more hard cost to get that listing sold. Also, less time involved.
Yeah, exactly. It just depends on if they're handling more of it or if our admin's handling more of it. And, you know, it's probably smarter to keep it somewhere between 20 and 30. I've probably had the lowest splits in the industry, probably closer to 20%, and we've tested some really, really high splits. You know, I just love to test stuff. I love to see what works and what doesn't. And it typically doesn't matter that much. It just, the only thing that really matters that much is they'll typically do whatever it's going to take to make them the same amount of money. So if someone's used to making 60 or 70 grand, whether you pay them 20 or 70% split, they're typically going to do about the same to make that much money. It's kind of interesting as you go through that. And that's just what my experience has been. People will typically make what they're just comfortable making.
Can you tell me some of the positions in your admin department and what they're doing?
You know, like I said, I just moved someone over to do some recruiting as we're growing. Got a transaction coordinator. She handles most of the transactions. If we're closing 25, 30 a month, she does most of those. I've got operations manager in there, and he helps with that as well. We've been able to shed a little bit of staff. We used to have, at one point we had 150 different short sales that we were working as they were stuck in the process, and that took a lot of man hours, and we had three or four different staff people that we had for that. Now we've just pretty much got one person doing that as well as helping out with some of the other stuff, and then I've got someone that works mostly training, helping the agents, trying to get on, making sure that they're being profitable and stuff like that. And then I've also got two or three different virtual assistants doing Craigslist stuff, to taking some of our listings and marketing all over the internet, to updating listing codes, just doing a lot of, you know, making the flyers and just a lot of other different odds and ends that I don't need to have someone necessarily in the office right here doing it.
Tell us just real briefly about the recruiter. You said that this was your first buyer agent. You've turned them into a recruiter. What is their job? What are they doing and how are they getting compensated?
It's pretty early in the process. So we're only about a month or two into that. So I guess that's one of those testing things, right? So I've never done this before. I've never done anything, but I said, you know, okay, what do I want to do? I want to attract more winners, right? I want to attract people that want to sell multiple houses a month. So I thought, well, what's the best way to be able to do that? And it would be to open up someone's time and be able to focus on doing that. So I'd say 70% of his time right now is just focused on, you know, I try and drive a lot of leads of people that are looking to join our team through Craigslist. Craigslist has been really great for that, through some other email advertising, some other postcards and different stuff of agents here in the area, and then doing interviews and having that interview process, multiple interviews to see if we're a good fit and if they're a good fit throughout that. And then once they come on board, kind of going through, we've got a, kind of an initial 30 or 40 or 50 hours of initial training before anybody gets any leads with our team as they kind of get up and learn our system and get up to speed on everything. So kind of helping hold their hand as they get through that. So that's mostly what it is right now.
You brought up an interesting point. It sounds like you have a ramp-up training program for all these people coming in. Could you describe it?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of goes back to Positioning for Profits, the company I've got with Don, that we started just going through and said, okay, what do you do with new agents on, you know, and this is years ago. We said, well, what do you do with new agents? And it would just be so frustrating to spend, in some cases, I would spend almost like 5 days with a new person that comes on and teach them everything. And then a couple times, oh, hey, you know what? I decided I'm not going to stay in real estate. Or, hey, my husband just got a job in Ohio. I got to go, or whatever it is. And it's, you know, it's frustrating. You're like, I just spent a week doing this. And so I just said, well, as I'm doing this, I'm just going to start recording everything. And we started just going through, and he recorded some and I recorded some, and we just went through and recorded everything that a new agent or someone joining our team would need to be able to kind of get up and going, and it would be really, really successful. And then it would be automated so that as they're going through, I can answer questions with it, but that it's a good way for me to show, hey, is this somebody I really want to invest thousands of dollars of leads into? How fast are they getting through this 50 hours of training? How fast are they doing that? And if they can't do that, they're probably going to struggle with almost everything else as well. So it's a way for me to see how they're doing. They can show me how hard they're working and pushing through it. And then at the end of it, I've got someone that at least has forgotten a lot of their old bad habits and is a lot closer to understanding what we're doing. And then we can really start to mold that person. So that's really what we have them do, is going through that process.
As you're bringing these people in, are you looking for experienced or inexperienced agents?
My perfect world would be someone that has been in the business for probably 3 or 4 months. They burned through a bunch of money testing and trying different things and realized how difficult it is, and that now is somewhat humble to be able to do it. Direct out of real estate school, almost everybody comes out bulletproof and thinking that this is going to be simple and leads are just going to pop out of their ears and that they're going to go out and take the world by storm. And at about that sweet spot, well, if they've been in the business for a few years, I still have some good success with it, but so often, at least half the time, they've got so many hang-ups and so many beliefs about real estate of, well, this is what it is, or and they're just not, most of them just aren't coachable, which is kind of a tough place to be. So that would probably be my sweet spot if I had to pick my ideal person. But even bigger than anything else, it's just the attitude, though. If they've got a good attitude, if they're willing to learn, I can work with them.
I've been getting a sense, as we've been talking, that you have kind of a different structure on your fees. You're not just charging a commission to buy or sell a home. Is that true, or do you have different fees?
Yeah.
Could you give us kind of an outline? So let's start with the seller side. You know, just basically what kind of, again, I'm not looking for percentages and stuff, but you're charging more than just a commission. What kind of fees are you charging, and for what?
Well, it depends. I mean, so on sellers, we've got our startup fee, we've got our commission, and we've got our transaction and compliance. So typically, and once again, this is our basic fees, and then we have to look at every situation and see what it is. But our typical seller fees, our startup fees for us to go to work, for us to start our initial marketing, take them on as a client, because if we say yes to them, we have to say no to somebody else because we only have a limited number of spots that we can take on as clients. So clients, we'll take them on. They write a check, a startup fee of $3,289. Then our fee, depending on which option they do, is going to be somewhere, you know, typically our fees or our commission fees are typically higher than everybody else's. And then we typically have a transaction compliance fee of anywhere between $684 and $984 at the end to make sure everything goes right, handle our staffing and making sure that they get extra attention throughout that process to give them the highest likelihood of that closing with the least amount of problems with it.
The startup fee, is that fee applied towards the commission?
No, it doesn't.
And is it a refundable fee?
It's a startup fee. It's for us to go to work for them, right? So they retain our services. We go, we do our initial marketing. We do our initial pricing of the house. We do our initial review of the property. We give them our advice because that's really what people are hiring us for, right? Our advice. And advice isn't free. I mean, when's the last good free advice you got? I can't remember any. And the good thing about real estate is it's a federal crime to price fix. And so if someone tells you, oh, well, that's high or that's low or whatever, you know, it's a federal crime. You know, you're allowed to charge just like there isn't a price. You know, how much is a car? Well, what kind of car do you want? Well, it's the same thing. How much is an agent? Well, it depends. What kind of agent? If you want to hire us, this is what we charge. So, you know, I think obviously so many agents, if they don't have a value proposition, their first thing they do is they drop their fees, right? Because all things being equal, people will hire you based on your fee. But if all things are not equal, then they're going to hire the most qualified, the person that's going to net them the most money. And that's really the conversation we have with people. Are you most concerned about the commission fee that you're looking at on paper, or are you more concerned about how much money you're going to put in your pocket at the end of the day? We're looking for clients that want to net the most money. There's always somebody that's got hang-ups about commission percentage or someone will do it lower. But, you know, there's always someone that will do it lower. We got people in our market will do listings for $25. So you got to make a decision. Is that what you want to compete with, or do you want to compete on bringing value?
You said the commission in the area, you had multiple options. How many options or packages do you have in that area?
Typically two or three.
I'm trying to get a picture of your overall business. You've got this interesting fee structure. You also have a lot of people running around. So agents are going to be listening to us, and they're going to be asking the question, are you profitable?
Yeah. We're not as profitable as if you're a single agent. You got to keep most of it, you know, minus your overhead and marketing and everything else like that. So I'm a non-competing team member. I run everything like a business, and we're over 20% profitability. We're over, you know, we shoot for 25-26%, which is good. I don't do any deals at all. And all the things that we're doing, I'm pretty comfortable in that range. I know a lot of people talk about if you're, quote, seventh level, you're not really involved or doing that, you should be closer to 30 or 40%. I just don't necessarily agree. I know the people that are, when they're serious about their numbers, you know, I think we're in a pretty good spot with that.
Your net is somewhere around 20% of the gross money that comes in the top for running the operation.
Somewhere between 20-25%. Just depends on, there's a lot of different variables with it and so forth in that. And if it ever got below 20, that would be a concern. I tend to test so much. I think if we got over 25, you got to probably take some of that money and start doing more stuff with it. You know, but when you're talking about $2-3 million in GCI, it still does okay. I still got to put gas in my tank, you know, and I still got to do what I really enjoy from a business standpoint. And most people in real estate, not very accurate with their numbers to begin with anyway. So
I don't know any Fortune 500 companies that can claim a 20% net profit margin. So it's pretty good.
I'm mostly just trying to look at what is the biggest number I can get to come out at the end. The percent to me is, yeah, it's not really a big deal to me. You know, obviously there's a lot of things I could do to get it up to 40, 50, 60. I could go in, I could do the appointments. I could just have one person do all the listing. I could, you know, there's a lot of different things. If your main concern is how do I get the most percent of profitability, and I know that's probably the majority of people in real estate, that's what they really get hung up on. I just don't. I just see this as a business. Like if I ran a car dealership or you know, sold boats or anything else like that, I'm just looking, are we profitable? Can we get money coming out? Is this something consistent? Whether it's a good market or a bad market, this is just a choice I make. If you wanted to still be involved and sell, yeah, I mean, you can get this closer to 40-50%. Not real difficult to be able to do it. It's just a match for my lifestyle and what I'm doing, and I run other businesses, so I'm pretty comfortable with it.
Let's talk about running some other businesses. I understand you're running a company called Positioning for Profits. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I mentioned just a little bit with my partner, Don Winter. He'll probably sell close to 800 houses this year. We'll sell 300 plus this year. But we've just been working on something for several years. We're always working on lead generation and working on these different things. And then obviously I would, explain to people about these videos and some of the money we were getting up starting up. And everyone's like, well, hey, can I come to your office? Can I come watch? How do you guys do this? And so for some of my friends, I just videoed it and they loved it and they wanted to buy it. And so made it a little bit better presentation and gave them all the information, our contracts, everything we do. So we did that a few years ago, and obviously people wanted more stuff, and we get into lead generation, and we weren't exactly thrilled with the websites that we had from other companies. They were still doing good, but they didn't do exactly what we needed from a team leader standpoint. So we did like what every crazy entrepreneur does. We say, well, it's not out there. And so we said, well, then why don't you build it? And so that's what we kind of spent the last couple years building out a technology to be able to do a lot of the same things that we need in our businesses to help take someone from 30 deals a year to 300 or 600. And so we try to put all those together, access all of our training, mostly the technology and lead generation and all the stuff like that. So yeah, that's what Positioning for Profits is kind of all about. And it's just a lot of fun. I probably spend most of my time doing that because it's just so fun to generate leads and enjoy it.
Sounds like Positioning for Profits, what you're doing there is you're showing a business model, first of all, going back to your reference to the E-Myth and Michael Gerber, you're showing your business model so other people can copy it. And then part of that business model is the lead generation and the lead follow-up lead management side. And then you also have this training aspect on the overall picture of the model that you've done through video. Does that sound correct?
Yeah, exactly. I drive around town and I see these little mom-and-pop restaurants pop up. And I had a friend that started one. And I said, well, why don't you just work with this other franchise thing? Why didn't you? He goes, oh, well, because they wanted me to buy the cups from them and do this. And I can get a better price over here. And I just thought, man, you're stepping over dollars to get to dimes. And eventually it just didn't work out that good. And I just look at this as so often as real estate agents, we see these models and we just say, oh, well, I can just do it myself, which you can, but there's also a cost to it. There's a time to learn all these things or to put these in place. And the smartest thing I did was, you weren't around at that point, but was listening to, Howard Brinton and going to hiring the best coaches and traveling the world, trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. And I think the more you can do that and model the behaviors of people that you want, because I don't think most people should have a business like me. Not everybody wants that. Most people want to just sell, or they might want a couple team members, and that's fine. But figure out what model you want, and then find somebody that's doing that out of all your interviews and so forth, and model their behavior, model that. And a lot of people that we came across wanted, they said they wanted to have big businesses, and they wanted to be able to make millions of dollars and be able to do this. And we know the strategies that work and how to do that. And so we just let them, if they want, just model what we're doing. We just try and put it together. And that's how almost any person gets good at anything, is they just model other people. And that's really what we're trying to put together.
Tell me if I'm wrong here, but I kind of got the impression that you and Don, on a personal level, were already doing this. You were kind of creating experiments and you were showing each other your models, and you kind of developed your internal systems first, and then from that kind of sprung this idea of putting it out there for more people. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. So he started, I think he was 22. I think he's like 27 or 28 now. But he went from almost nothing, because he modeled some of the things I was doing and some of the other people, that he showed that you can go from almost zero to 100 sides and almost overnight. You don't have to go through the same pain points. You don't have to go through that. And so we've been good friends from the get-go, and he's just sharp, and we've just been working on a lot of different stuff. And that's kind of how it came, is a lot of people go to him and say, oh my gosh, you're so young, or you know, I used to be young. I was on the 30 under 30, and I guess now I need the 40 under 40 or something like that. But I used to be kind of young and doing amazing things, and now he's young and doing amazing things, and people just want to see that, and they want to see, how do you do that? And so we just, it just takes too long to do it on a one-on-one basis like that. But as we're already teaching our team, so they essentially get to see exactly how we're training our team, how we're doing everything. So it's not like made up stuff. It's not theory. It's stuff that we use every day. You know, we eat our own dog food. We do this stuff. This is exactly what we're doing. So many people out there are teaching, well, this worked in 1980, or this here, I think this might work. This isn't theory. This is just stuff we're already doing, right? This is what works.
If somebody wanted to tap into that, where would they go to find more information about positioning for profits?
They can go to just positioning4profits.com. You can go to positioning4profits.com, and they can just opt in and see what we're up to and get a ton of free information and free demos and see everything we're doing. And, you know, like I said, it's not right for everybody. Just like in your real estate business, if you're everything to everybody, you're nobody to everybody. We're just looking for people that are up-and-comers that want to sell a lot of stuff, and that they're not just looking for the new shiny object, but they want to build systems into their business so that they can actually have a business, not just a job.
Curtis, what drives you?
I'd say a lot of things. I love to be around winners. I love to be around people that push themselves. I love to learn. And the thing with learning is you fail a lot. I learn by trying stuff and getting my hand burned or whatever, but kind of cool when you find stuff that works. So I'm just passionate about learning. I'm passionate about trying to find things that work. And especially in this business, I think the bar is so unbelievably low as an industry. I want to raise it. I want to raise the professionalism. I want to raise the quality, the skill of real estate agents out there. And that's one of the things that really pushes me to try and improve a little bit.
Curtis, you've been doing this a while. You have a lot of success. Why are you successful?
I'm definitely successful because of the people I surround myself with. Every once in a while, I have some pretty good ideas, but I just surround myself with better people or people that want to improve and want to be better than me in every area I can. When I learn from people that are smarter than me, I learn from people that have done it, and I just model their behavior. If I had to come up with everything from scratch, I think, you know, I come up with some good ideas here and there, but it's about being around people that push you to be your best, and it's about learning from people that have gone before you and modeled. You don't get a bonus by making it painful. You don't get a bonus by doing it the hard way.
If you were going to advise a brand new agent just getting in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
The very first thing you need to do is decide what your end looks like. I know it seems kind of crazy when you're just starting out, but you've got to decide, do you just want to sell? Do you want a team? Is this a hobby, or you want to make a boatload of money? Because there's different strategies for different things. And then when you decide pretty close, and you'll be changing your mind a lot as you go through, but as you decide what you want, okay, is this, I want to make, because there's a different model from making $50,000 as there is from $500,000. The boat looks different. You're going a different direction. So once you've got that clear about what you're doing, then I'd find somebody that's doing that, and then find out how they got there and just model exactly what they're doing, and don't overcomplicate it.
Do you think the top agent interviews like the one we're doing now with Mastermind Agent are valuable?
Unbelievably so. Unbelievably so. I used to just wait for Howard Britton's CDs to come and go through those, and I'd drive all over town, all over the country to find out where are the smart people going to be? How can they do it? And now it's just so much easier. It's almost too easy, because you could just sit and listen to it wherever you want. And it's just very easy. And that sometimes we don't maybe pay attention, or we don't give it as much impact because it's so easy. Where if you have to struggle a little bit, have to get on a plane, or you have to go somewhere, you're much more likely to pay attention to it. So it's the same information. It's actually easier and better because you can fast forward, rewind, and kind of go back and listen to stuff and see it. But that's what it's all about. When you go to the title company at the end of the day and you get your check or whatever, they don't give you a bonus because it was an original idea on how you found it. You know, there's no original idea. It's about how can you package it and how can you learn from other people. And there's people doing so much better than I am and so much better than you and everybody. And we just have to search out those people and find what nuggets we can do and how can we tweak it and how can we make ourselves better and our business better.
Curtis, I've come to the end of my questions for today. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about that I haven't addressed?
No, you're great. You just dig and challenge me and make me think harder on a lot of stuff. So I appreciate it and had a lot of fun. And just really encourage people just to model, find someone that's doing what you want and model what they're doing. You're going to get the same results. People are not at the top or whatever if you think they are because of their sparkling personality. It's because of the systems they put in their business, and the systems come because they modeled somebody else that had those systems. So this business, when it really comes down to it, is really, it's actually very easy, and sales is pretty easy if you've got the right things in place for it. So it's been a lot of fun, Mike. I appreciate it, man.
Well, Curtis, you opened our eyes to new ideas. Your model of the non-competitive team leader who focuses exclusively on lead generation is paying big dividends. Your ability to generate seller leads from the internet is rare and exciting. Your rapid growth by doubling and possibly tripling your team is aggressive and ambitious. Your love of testing, experimenting, learning, and your willingness to fail is creating amazing insights and opportunities. I think your brightest days are ahead of you. Thank you again for being our top agent of the month. And join us next call when we talk to an agent who sold 304 homes last year while staying involved in community service. Find out who she is on the next Success Call.
You've been listening to Success Calls on the Mastermind Agent Network, where top real estate agents from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the calls at www.mastermindagent.com.